like, whole body instinctively wants to just turn the dial all the way because I'm feeling so hot, I just gotta turn the dial all the way. It's like alien to my nature to function with fans in this order.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Sophisticates, where knowledge is power and power is an excuse to talk about pretty much nothing. I'm Matt Patches, and with me, as always, is Rajan Mudambi.
Yes, I am.
Oh, look, excitement, yes. And also Ryan Pfister.
Enjoying his last 2 weeks in Pittsburgh.
Oh, sadness. You're where are you moving to? Tell them.
Nothing's set in stone yet.
You have no idea.
Wait, so you're leaving Pittsburgh right before the football season starts?
I know.
If only that mattered to Pfister.
Oh, fair point.
In fact, I am so dedicated to the Sophisticates that I am now missing the Steelers-Eagles preseason game.
Well, preseason games don't really count for anything.
I have no idea if that's true, but I will give you the benefit of the doubt, as we have many topics to barrel through right now. So, per usual, three mind-shatteringly amazing topics for tonight. So put on your anti-mind-shattering helmet and whatnot, and let's get started. Our first topic for tonight, car alarms and preventing theft.
So our idea of discussing car alarms came out of a car alarm that went off during last week's episode.
Which you probably didn't hear because I would probably take it out, hopefully.
Yeah, and ironically enough, there is now a siren going off outside of my own window. But this had to start thinking about whether the car alarm actually has the potential to stop a theft. And I was reading a few articles online about people arguing that they don't, so we should just do away with...
I'm curious, where were you reading them? Articles about car alarms going off and whether they're actually helpful?
Well, let's see. I was just looking at one a few minutes ago. It's called noiselaw.com. Headline, car alarms are harmful to our health.
Harmful
Wait,
to our health?
Wait, that seems extreme.
Yeah, that's... I mean, whether they actually prevent theft or not is one thing. If they're actually harmful to our health...
And I quote... Traffic noise raises blood pressure, increases stress hormones, and leads to learned helplessness in school children.
Wait, what?
Learned helplessness? Wait, what? Yes. What is that? What do you think that even means?
I'm not sure about learned helplessness. I think it's that these you have no control over the noise.
Well,
so it's almost
true,
like a
don't.
Form of torture, and. The children of the world lose their senses because of car alarms.
You just learn to give up. There's nothing that can be done about the noise, so there's nothing that can be done about the other
problems
in the world.
That's really interesting that it has some sort of bigger metaphorical symbolism other than, you know, because that's the biggest problem with car alarms and why I imagine most people have a problem with them is because they start blaring and you literally can't do anything unless you start breaking into the car and therefore you have now committed a crime.
I mean, it's similar in that regards to if you live in like a dorm and somebody's alarm is going off and it's in their locked room and you just can't do anything about it because they're gone.
But doesn't that mean something's wrong? Like, shouldn't we be taking more action? I think our senses have been dulled to car alarms and alarms in general.
Well, what do you propose to do?
I mean, people have to literally take more action. You know, we were discussing this a little bit beforehand, Ryan, and I was on the New York City government webpage, a portion of it titled Crime Prevention, and they have listed the steps you should take when you hear a car alarm. You know, it's observe the behavior around the car. Is something wrong? Write down the license plate number. Write down notes. What's going on? And then
so
call 911. Do
who
something.
Who actually does this?
The person who hears the car alarm, who's standing next to the car.
No, I'm not saying who should do this. Who does this?
Well, no, that's the problem. No one does it. I mean, I've never seen anyone react to a car alarm. But why do we... I mean, that's why we have them, so maybe...
Well, that's because car alarms usually go off because something touched the car and has absolutely nothing to do with a theft.
Right, but even if someone hit a car, you should probably phone it in. Shouldn't you look and react to it? I mean, it's basically the car alarm cried wolf at that point.
I think the issue is that the car alarm cries wolf so often, is almost of its nature going to cry wolf so many times that it it's almost impossible to create a car alarm people would trust.
It seems so useless and so annoying, but I think it's our problem, not car alarms. Car alarms seem like they should have a purpose, and something has happened to the car if it goes off. You know,
so
I don't.
The question though is, okay, so if in the case they were going off, they actually were going off during a proper, an actual theft attempt.
Sure.
Would this actually accomplish anything?
Yes, someone would look over to it and see the theft.
Well, yeah, I mean, people usually steal cars in the middle of the night, though, you know, when there aren't, or hopefully when there isn't someone on the street to see that you're stealing the car.
But don't you think, I mean, that's the problem. When you hear a car alarm at night, you put multiple pillows over your ears and turn away.
What am I supposed to do, go outside?
You're supposed to look out your window and see if someone's actually stealing the car. This is your fault.
If I look out the window and see if someone's stealing the car, I'm still not going to prevent the car from being stolen, and I'm probably not going to see the license plate anyway.
Yeah, but you're going to be able to call 911 and say that there's a crime being committed on your street. You can describe the vehicle. The problem is people are so annoyed by car alarms at this point that they will not take any measure. I mean, you're awake now in the middle of the night, so why don't you look out the window?
But the thing is, I just read someplace that car alarm, like if you're a good thief, good car thief, you can break into the car, disable the alarm, and start the car and drive away in less than 20 seconds.
I mean, so, how many good car thieves
are
there?
What, like hotwire the car?
Yeah, I mean, presumably most people who are stealing cars are relatively good at it. I would expect a large percentage of car thefts are being done by people who, you know, steal cars regularly.
I would probably agree with that.
And so most of them probably can get it done in certainly less than a minute. But, I mean, most of the time when these car alarms are going off and we're ignoring them, it's because they're going off for, like, half an hour straight. That's not a car that's being stolen.
You're getting angry. You can hear the echoes of car alarms from your past. And you're becoming upset by it right now, I can tell.
Well, yeah. So here's the one argument I heard in favor of the car alarm. And they're saying that the point of the car alarm is actually not to stop the car, the theft, once it is in progress. It's just to make it kind of annoying more annoying than it is to steal other cars. Because while you're trying to steal it, this noise is going off. So it acts as a deterrent.
You don't know if a car is alarmed until
all cars are alarmed.
No, they are not. My car is not alarmed.
Okay, all new cars are.
Really? All new cars have car alarm.
I would.
I don't know.
Venture to guess. Again, I don't. As many people will know from the last episode, I don't drive that much and I don't use cars.
Wait. No. This is definitely not true. I've at the rental cars. I've driven a bunch of rental cars and none of them have been alarmed.
How would you know?
Because I've touched the car when it's locked, and it does not start beeping.
Well, I think you have to kind of try and break into it. I don't think if you touch a car, the alarm goes off.
I don't even know how you trigger. Like, it must be fairly easy to trigger these cars.
No, you have to either hit it with a car or lodge a big metal bar into the window to try and unlock it that way. That's how you break into a car. You have a thin piece of metal, and you unlatch the locks from inside. So
right.
If you do that, that's when the alarm goes off. Unless you're doing that, it's not really going to go off.
So then how do they go off so easily? Because somebody hits the car?
Yeah.
I think it generally happens when the alarm is not installed properly.
Really? I would imagine that if you hit it with a car, then that jiggles the alarm inside of it the same way it would jiggle if you put the metal in it and tried to undo the locks. It's just sensitive to the
I don't know.
We don't build cars. But let me quickly ask you this. What would you do instead of a car alarm? I mean, I think the only thing you can do to prevent car theft is to make as many people aware that something's happening to this car as possible.
See, the other thing is you can have an audible alarm, but you could also have a silent alarm, where if somebody's trying to get into the car, it sends, you know, a distress call to some security agency or whatever. Your OnStar, whatever. And I think that would probably be more useful than
is that real?
Audible alarm.
I'm sure it's real.
Yeah, absolutely it's real.
Well,
that's expensive.
Probably.
I mean, you're still going to run into the issue of false positives. I actually think if you had a silent alarm, you'd remove the one advantage of the alarm. Is that it's a deterrent? Is that it's going off really loudly as you're trying to break into the car?
The annoying factor.
But you also have to think if you're a car thief and you know that you're gonna have this alarm disabled in 20 seconds, that's kind of an incentive to just go through with it and finish the job quickly, rather than having the alarm just go off for like 10 minutes.
I guess the question is, if you were a thief and you were looking at a car, would you know whether it had a car alarm?
I don't think you can.
I think you?
You
would if you're actually stealing cars, unless you're a super desperate thief.
Well, how would you know?
I think older cars don't have alarms.
That would just mean steal old cars. But I don't think people are just stealing old cars.
Well, if I was going to steal a car, I'd steal an old car because I assume that it doesn't have an alarm.
But that's not why you steal a car.
I know.
What do you mean?
You steal new cars. You steal brand new cars. Take them to the clean out place and then they'll.
No, some people steal new cars to sell them for parts, and some people steal old cars as getaway cars for bank robberies. Come on. You guys are stupid. Anyway.
I thought that was a van. You have to have a van for that.
No, you can have a regular car. I guess the point here is that...
Depends how much you're stealing from the bank.
Unless we get less annoyed with car alarms, they'll never work. Unless we take the next step to become more aware of...
I mean, if...
When an alarm goes off, we actually turn our heads and acknowledge the fact that something might be wrong, then they'll never work. It's our fault.
I think if in order for the alarm to work, we're relying on bystanders to actually be proactive. They're not going to work.
Okay,
and
so
not
once
just
again,
to be proactive some of the time. It's to be proactive all the time, even though most of those cases are going to be false positives.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So once again, we put our faith in humanity, and it's lost. We always come to the conclusion that the people of the world will fail us in the end. That's the most depressing podcast ever.
It's because that's your baseline conclusion.
Well,
you know,
I have to look at the big picture.
When we hit the 10 minutes, it's like, well, what can we all agree on? Oh, other humans suck. Okay, good. Let's move on.
Well, on that note, why don't we move on to our second topic for tonight? Unfollowing people online. So, as someone who works on the internet and I talk to a lot of people using social media, Facebook, Twitter, that sort of thing. And you grow to follow a lot of people, especially on something like Twitter, where I can blindly follow people and they don't know or whatever. But it comes to a point where you meet people online. And I've come to an issue where over years' time now, since Facebook has been around for what, like 6-7 years, Twitter 3 or 4, and come to the point where I don't want to follow everyone that I used to. I don't want to be friends with everyone that I used to. But now they'll know. They'll know that I am unfollowed them, and they know that I'm like not friends, in quotes, with them anymore, especially on Facebook, where everyone acknowledges that, okay, we're going to be friends. I just don't want to see them anymore. And I don't know when or if it's appropriate these days to unfollow people in social media or how to get away with it.
I have personally experienced this with the issue that you have these follower accounts that you want to maintain on Twitter if you're very concerned with your Twitter presence. And it actually becomes kind of this game of cat and mouse, in that you are trying to get people to follow you without having you follow them. Because if you take the risk and you follow these people that you think are never going to follow you back, you're going to have this huge who are you following count, which is just going to make you look like you're some kind of big following junkie, and you're not cool. You know, it's a mirror of the real world there.
But then why would you ever unfollow people?
Well, some people can do that if you're going to be like a real douchebag. You can go out, you can follow people, and then once they've followed you and you think they're not paying attention anymore, unfollow them.
I think the key word here is being a douchebag, and that's actually not something I want to do.
I mean, wouldn't you, like, okay. So I guess the question is, I think that you are, like, it's like unfriending. You know, I think you are definitely allowed to unfriend if you are not friends with the person. But
I mean, once that person does want to engage you in some sort of way, they're going to find out, and they'll be pissed off.
So you have to make sure you only do this to someone that you don't care if they're pissed off at you.
Right, but I don't want anyone to be pissed off at me. And I think,
but I mean,
I think
if it's someone like I have so many friends on Facebook right now that I'm probably never going to see it again in my life.
Maybe, but they're closer to you than you think they are because of how social media works these days.
That's true. That's true.
They would still get mad. Like you could be slandered in some way by them, and now you won't know because you don't follow them. That's my biggest problem too. My biggest problem is I'm going to be slandered by people.
Well, I guess the question is, what are you hoping to gain by unfollowing these people? Because
a breath of fresh air.
Okay.
The absence of their voice in my life.
Well, you don't actually have to read your pure people you follow stream.
But, I mean, that's how I see it all. But I want to get the big picture view. I want to see everybody's... I don't want to put anyone in the corner either. Like, I don't want to miss anything. There's this urge to see it all. If I'm gonna invest myself fully into social media, then I should probably engage it full on and see it all. Does that make sense?
Well, I see what you're saying here, but I think the issue is, and I think this is one of the things that kind of annoys me about Twitter that Google Plus has kind of pushed forward, is that like we're equating you have this Facebook was first with the whole friend metaphor. And the idea is you want to keep up with your friends.
A terrible word to use.
But then I think people carry that over to Twitter, and you now have this ability to follow someone without necessarily them following you back. But there's still this assumption that, like, you want to signify this friendship. But if you're friends with someone, and even if you are friends with them, you might not want to follow. You might not want to hear every single thing they do.
Interesting. So it's both a how the social media sites work, how they literally work, but also semantics in some way.
I guess the fact that it's public, the fact that people are adding this level of importance or like a social signifier to following, you know, when from a technical perspective or like a functional perspective, moron, I guess it's like, I am signifying that I want to read, I am telling the system that I want to read this stuff that this person is posting.
Right.
Now, on the other hand, there obviously is a social component there, because if you're saying, I mean, because otherwise what you're saying is, I want to be friends with you, I just don't want to read what you say. You know?
That's like a big F you, I think.
There, which it, well, it is, but I mean, that's effectively what you're doing.
But
you know, I mean...
Well, the difference, though, I think that you just touched on is that everyone else can also see that you're giving him the finger right now.
Right, exactly.
Like, if you unfriend someone, well, I mean, they probably have to pay attention to see, but, like, you know, people can see, like, my friends can see who I'm friends with. And if they happen to see that I was friends with so-and-so, and then I've just unfriended them, that's something that they could see. And so it becomes kind of like a public gesture that I am not friends with you.
Now, on the flip side, I mean, it sounds like maybe people should lighten up about being unfollowed, too. But I would feel bad if someone unfollowed me or unfriended me or something. That would make me feel bad. But is this a matter of people lightening up about that kind of stuff and just accepting that people are eventually going to not want to hear them? I hope not, because that's what the sophisticates depends on. So
here's the question, I think. Like, I think that if you are a niche content publisher... Like, for instance, I think that you have a pretty diverse publishing topic. So, I am fine to follow you on Twitter, Matt.
Are you talking about me personally?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you.
But, you know, if you were, like, if the only thing you tweeted about was movies all the time, movies, and you were just, I think the technical term is blowing up my feed.
I hope there was a hand gesture involved with that, like throwing up
really
gang
was.
Signs or
something. Yeah, just blowing it up, you know, and just taking it over. Like, I would be friends with you. I would still want to be friends with you. I just wouldn't want to see all this movie stuff that you posted.
Right, but should I be insulted that when you unfollow me?
No, but I think that if you had like a fellow movie person. Somebody who was really into movies and mm-hmm. they unfollowed you, I think I'd actually view that as more of an insult than an unfriend.
Yeah.
Because it's saying, like, I don't find your content interesting, even though this is my area of interest.
Oh, my God. I hope it doesn't happen to me. Well, have you, final thoughts here, basically. Have you ever unfriended or unfollowed someone on your many, social media avenues. I guess Rajan's lucky. He's not on Twitter.
Yes.
Would really? You, have, not, no,
what?
Not on Twitter.
No Twitter at all.
Nope.
No Twitter at all.
Why not? He's worried we're going to unfollow him.
Yeah, that's basically it. I'm worried that people... I have no interest in tweeting things, and I've just been too lazy to figure out what other people are tweeting.
This is basically your Twitter. You get to talk
your
tweets.
You know what this calls for.
Well, Pfister, have you ever...
Well, Pfister, if you recall, you are also the one who set up my Facebook in the first place.
I do not recall this at all.
And well, you did.
Hopefully you haven't been unfriended. Ryan, have you ever unfriended or unfollowed anyone? Admit it right now.
Yes, I have done both. I have done both.
Was it a big to-do for you? Was this like a big step?
I mean, I think that unfollowing is done on a more on a per-person basis, on a more incremental basis, and that you like see this person is there's too much stuff from this person, you do it. Whereas I think friending is done, unfriending is like a kind of an iterative thing where you're like a batch thing. You're going through it at all. You go through
purge.
And you're like,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, you're purging. You're like, I don't know these people. I'm going to go in.
Your
I'm
nose is in the air.
Take these people out. Yeah.
Well, on that note, it sounds like our social hierarchies are changing because of social media. And I promise not to unfriend either of you in the next week or so.
Okay.
Moving on to our third and final topic for today, fan settings.
Okay, so directly prior to the recording of this Sophisticates episode, I was in a room and there was a fan on, and I felt that I ought to turn it off because I didn't want the sound interfering with our conversation. And so I walked over to turn it off, and as people may or may not remember, I don't think I've ever seen a fan that does not do this, but basically on the dial... It goes from off, it goes immediately to high, and then medium, and then low. Or maybe just high and low, if there are not three settings. And that seems odd to me. Because wouldn't you expect it to go from off to low and gradually get higher?
Well, that seems very conventional and Western of you to think. But I do have a theory on this, and I think it's because people are looking for instant gratification in... as many areas of their life as possible, and fan makers know this, and that when you turn it on, when do you turn on a fan? When you're hot.
Yes.
So assumably you are sweating and hot, and when you turn it on, it's like a blast of cool air right away because it's on its highest setting. It just starts spinning, and then you go from there. You go either down to something lower, more casual fan use, or something more intense, and you keep it on high. I think that's It's about, at its core, it's about people wanting instant gratification.
But I mean, what if you only wanted it to be on low? And if it goes on high, it's going to, like, blow all the papers around in your room or whatever. You can't get to low without going through high.
Well, I think most of the switches are designed in a way that you can jump there as quickly as possible. I think it always hits high, though. You're right.
So the fan will speed up very quickly, and then... it'll have to slow down.
Yeah.
But you're going to get that gust whether you want it or not. Whereas if you started going gradually upwards, you'd only get the gust if you wanted the gust.
But this is the problem with building and inventing anything. You're trying to serve your audience in some way, and you have to predict what they want when they're using it, like in the moment. It can't just serve a purpose. Like a fan serves an obvious purpose to keep people cool, but its use, its in-the-moment use is important. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You have to consider like how I'm sure the people who invented fans balance these kind of things out. Like obviously things might blow, but is the cool factor more important?
Well, here's the thing, like when I am using a fan or any kind of temperature regulation tool, it's because I want to I turn it on when I'm trying to get back to normal. I don't like get super, super, super hot and then try to cool down immediately. I turn it on when I'm getting kind of hot. And I feel like at that point I want it on low.
Yeah, I can see that.
But
and
not if you walk into a sweltering hot room. You want immediate, you need that air. You need to Like, you're going to enter a hotter place, usually.
Where else is this in progress besides fans? Like, I feel like everywhere else in life, you know, like in a car, you it doesn't start at the maximum acceleration and then go down.
And actually, I think if you took a look at ceiling fans, it's the opposite. You know, if you pull the cord, you pull it first, doesn't it?
It first goes to low,
and then it's
It doesn't have the advantage of drawing electricity the way a box fan does.
Well, I mean, it is electrically powered. It's an electric motor, and there's fans, too.
But I think there's a technical reason. I think there's some reason why a fan has to have high first.
Really?
You think so?
To, like, get it going? I wonder if a fan can't kind of, like, work up just to slow. If it needs to gradually come back down.
So you think
slow.
it could function kind of like a one of those like those gasoline powered lawnmowers? You have to like pull the cord and it's like it revs the engine in order to get it started. You're thinking it's something like that.
Well, sort of. I was just going to leave it at the flux capacitor, but yeah.
I'm trying to think, though, of other things that kind of work in that same way. I guess, yeah, lawnmowers and that sort. Anything that needs to be propelled is kind of that way. But if there's anything else that has the foresight to predict someone's need for gratification. Because I honestly think I would never want a fan to start on slow. It's not the kind of device. It's not used for that.
I think we have very different. Maybe there's different types of fan people in this world, you know, like, and maybe there's a metaphor for something larger, because I am always wanting my fan to start on low. I very rarely will have the fan go up to high.
And the other weird thing is that, so if I want to put the fan on high, my like whole body instinctively wants to just turn the dial all the way, because I'm feeling so hot, I just got to turn the dial all the way, but then I'll just set it to low. It's like alien to my nature to function with fans
yeah.
in this order. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I think that's a problem with you again, just like car alarms is a problem with you.
No, I think this undermines your whole argument, Matt, because your argument is that this is that the fan starting on high is like in alliance with people's emotional natures of just wanting it to start on high.
So
it's a calculated move.
You're saying that people inherently want to just push. If they want to go high speed, then they're just going to forcefully push a dial as far as it can go.
I think so. It's in order to go one notch on the dial, it's a calculated move. You have to be thinking, I just want to move this one notch.
It must be a
scientific
thing.
Whereas if you're going to go all the way around, you just kind of like, you know, twist it with your wrist.
Right. It must have to do with the mechanics then. That must be the reason.
It could be that. I mean, it could be, you know, maybe I could totally see these marketers overvaluing people's laziness over their passion, which probably makes sense in modern society.
Yes. Once again, I think we're going back to humanity's biggest flaw. They are lazy. No, come on. People are good. Actually, here's an interesting fact about fans. I believe this is true, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not supposed to leave fans on when you leave your house, because when they're on, especially when they're on high, they produce a lot of electricity and actually end up heating your house.
Do you know if this is true? Actually, yeah.
So
technically, that is true.
Why would you even want it on high? It'll produce more heat.
A fan will heat a room if it's a closed environment. Like if it's a sealed room, a fan will heat the room because you're inducing energy. You're using energy to move the blades, and that will cause heat. The reason why fan will cool you is because it's not a closed system, and you know, heat can dissipate. And what you're really getting is you're getting this gust of air that will cool you, because you're right in front of the fan. But if you were like behind the fan, it would probably not.
So at the end of the day, there's no reason to turn it on high.
Unless you need that, like, instant gratification gust that we're just talking about.
Right. So it should probably be the first thing you do. It should probably be the first notch.
But if you're... I really think if you're feeling that way, you just want to turn the dial.
Just turn the dial.
As you can tell, I feel very passionately about fans.
Good. You should.
With the amount of electronics that we've infused into everything else, if there is a mechanical reason, I think they should junk it.
Technology is there.
I think they should
make better
input
fans.
A electronic middle layer that will allow you to press a button a long time to make it go all the way up to high.
For the human. That's not going to fly.
You want the work to be there. You want them to be holding down the button. Ah, I'm cold. Or I'm hot. Ah.
I have absolutely no idea what that... I can't picture what you're doing right
that
now.
That was Rajan cranking his fan, but instead of being able to twist a knob, he has to hold down a button.
Oh, I thought that was the Hulk trying to use a fan.
I feel like pressing a button would be less satisfying.
Yeah, no. Dials all the way.
It's definitely about the dial. You gotta be like a physical action.
Okay, you know what? I've googled a bunch of pages on this, and their theory is that if you trying to get this fan motor going, and basically the fans, as they're saying, it's like a dimmer switch. But dimmer switches you can start on low. But they're saying that if you start the fan equivalent of a fan dimmer, that it's hard to get the torque to get the blades moving.
Makes sense to me. Yeah, it's just like you were saying, Rajan. It's like a lawnmower.
But why are ceiling fans different then?
I don't think you can because they're installed in your wall. You wouldn't want them to go as fast as a.
I feel like it's because the blades are longer, so it would take too much energy to get them going quickly. That's probably what it is.
We clearly should have tabled this till we have a fan expert on our show.
I don't know if anyone out there listening knows more about box fans. Please, please submit more information for us, as we're very curious to know why the torque is important in a box fan. On that note, I think we are sufficiently wrapped up for this episode. So, Fister, haircut?
Yes.
Yes, you're getting one?
I got one. Oh. I got one. It was kind of a big deal because my girlfriend was like, don't get a haircut.
You're going into the fall, though. You need more hair.
Yeah, but it was getting shaggy, and I actually kind of – I'm thinking of upping my number again because I've been trying to get more frequent haircuts but at a higher number so I can maintain the hair not looking shaggy but still being longer. And I'm at like a 5. I went from a 4 to a 5. I think I need to go up to a 6 or maybe even a 7.
Wait, they go that high?
That's costly.
I guess. I don't know. Maybe they were just joking about it at the place. They were like, oh, yeah, we could go up to like a 7. But – maybe they were kidding.
I just didn't. I mean, I'm sure they know what they're talking about.
They are barbers.
Exactly. Well, they're the pros.
You have to understand that I try to carry. I'm pretty sure they could just do it with scissors at that point anyway. But I insist on enforcing on them the buzzer measuring system as a convenience factor for me.
You are backseat haircutting, sir.
Yeah. Like I would like. I will. I guess I can refer to it as a 7 equivalent.
This will not end well for you, I predict. But I will be curious to know if it does end well. So good luck to you. And that about wraps things up for this episode of The Sophisticates. Thank you very much for listening. You know where to find us. We're on Twitter at Sophisticast. We're on Tumblr, thesophisticates.tumblr.com. We're on SoundCloud. We're most importantly on iTunes. Look up The Sophisticates. Subscribe. Leave some comments. Leave a review. Leave anything. We love it. And that's about it. Good night.